Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
Well, hello again. It's hard to believe it's Friday once again with former Fighting Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley. I am Sean Stiers. Welcome to the kickoff of another weekend of Notre Dame football. We've got the Fighting Irish in Miami, Ohio. Tomorrow, Chuck Martin and the Redhawks coming into town, and a unique kickoff time of 5 o'clock at Notre Dame Stadium tomorrow. We've got, of course, a full day of pre-Notre Dame football action tomorrow here on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is presented by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. You can also visit sharpleytraining.com. We've got a lot of Notre Dame-specific stuff that we're going to hit today, including a new segment called Evan's Chalk Talk that you've been waiting to bust out for a while, right?
Absolutely. We'll get to it later, right?
Yeah, we're going to do
also,
that in a little
and
bit.
And also, too, just a couple of things going on at Sharpley Training. There is a speed and agility one-day mini camp tonight.
Oh, yeah?
If anyone's interested, 5 to 6 p.m., it's $25. Stop in, push some sleds, pull some sleds, flip some things, throw some things, jump on things. It's a lot of fun.
I know that you're not a CrossFit box,
right,
by any means, but are some of the things that you do there comparable to what you'd find at a CrossFit?
Yeah, so I'd say the biggest difference is we don't do as much Olympic lifting or overhead lifting. You know, the clean and jerk is one, or mm-hmm. the barbell snatch is another one. We incorporate those a little bit. We use more dumbbells, more free weights into our workouts. We always talk about in the movement first, and then we get into adding the speed to the movement and then the strength portion of it as well. But we have a lot of different people come through the door, moms and dads, businessmen, businesswomen, and then obviously we have the athlete side too with our middle school, high school, college, and pro athletes that come in and train. We have 7-year-olds up to 70-year-olds. Their goals vary. We modify for a lot of people. There's injuries. You've got a back or a knee. I'm in that same category too. So we're trying to fight off decrepitness.
Tell me about it.
as a group. And that's the type of community that we have. That group of people that we have, they're fantastic, that we see on a daily basis. And we're kind of all in it together. It's a great family environment. We have something for everyone, for the young kids, for the moms and the dads. It's been great over the last 3 years to kind of see that grow and where we are right now.
You've told me some of your workout schedules before. Are you what time do you get to the gym every day?
So Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now we have the 5:30 a.m. class. So I'm there just after 5, and that's kind of, in Elkhart we have a lot of RV guys, and they're coming in before work, getting a workout in, and then heading to their places of business. And then we have a couple of mid-morning classes, like a 9 and 11. And my wife and I right now, we're trading off on who's coaching those. So what's great, we have a 4-month-old baby, Lucy. Mm-hmm. And Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm hanging out with Lucy from roughly about 6:30-ish when I get home from the gym till Jackie gets done, or a little after noon, which has been really great. I find myself pretty blessed to be able to spend that much time with her on a daily basis. And then Tuesday and Thursday, I'm in during the morning session. And then both of us are in Tuesday evenings. Grandma gets to come over and babysit a little bit, which she likes. But most evenings we're starting things up during the school year around 3 o'clock. And we're there, anywhere between 8, 9, 10 p.m., depending on, how late somebody wants to train. During the summer, it's a little bit different. We've got our college athletes back in town. We've got some of our pro athletes too, and it's rocking and rolling during the summer, which we love. And then we have two or three coaches that have been in our program, all college students right now. They coach all the classes, and then Jackie and I take a lot of the private sessions, some of the more niche training. The quarterback, for me, the quarterback side and then the baseball side are the two niche trainings that we have.
Sure.
That we've seen a lot of growth. I think, year one and two, that's what most people saw us as, was the athletic side, especially in the football realm. And now we've seen baseball grow. We've got a travel team, a 16U team that's going to start next year as our first team. So we're really excited on what we're doing. A couple other projects, hopefully, over the next year or so, potentially looking at a couple of other locations, Mishawaka, Granger area. So excited to see where that goes.
Excellent. And again, you can visit sharplytraining.com. A lot of good stuff. Where are you guys located right now?
So it's off the toll road in Elkhart. If you know, there's two different Elkhart exits. It's the Elkhart exit that has all the food.
Right.
So what you do is you'll get off the toll road, you'll jump over the bridge, and it's going to be the first left right behind the Menards Lumber Yard. We have, it's kind of a, we call them suites, but it's, you know, it's a different type of atmosphere. You have kind of a, it's a tough setting, as far as it's a warehouse. but we have one space that we call the lab where we have turf. We actually got it from the South Bend Cubs when they ripped up the turf and put in the new grass, which we're able to use then year round for change of direction.
A lot of different stuff.
We have a cage then that we can hire and lower, which is great. And then the other side is more of kind of your small box gym field, rubber flooring, but a lot of open space. Like I said, it's all about movement. We try to help people move better. That's really our goal.
All right. Sounds good. And again, you can visit sharplytraining.com. That's all at sharplytraining, sharplytraining.com, 574-226-8234. Now, again, we're going to talk about defense here in a little bit. We haven't talked a ton about the Fighting Irish defense this year. We've talked a lot about Brandon Wimbush. We'll hit that in your Chalk Talk, though, as well later. And you have some other interesting stuff. There's some news with Kevin Stefferson last night. I wanted to start because this kind of becomes relevant once again. Last night, the Bears-Packer game, you've got Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan, who knocked out Green Bay Packers receiver Davante Adams with a vicious helmet-to-helmet hit. He hits him with the crown of his helmet into his face mask. Trevathan was flagged on the play, but he also could be suspended and fined for the hit because the NFL has video evidence of the severity of the hit, and they can go back and look at that. So now, at the same time, last night, Brian Kelly, during his Thursday post-practice press conference, was asked about the hit, the helmet-to-helmet hit by Michigan State linebacker Chris Fry on Notre Dame quarterback Brandon Wimbush in last week's game. It was a clear case of targeting, and Brian Kelly said last night that both the Big Ten and the ACC have admitted that targeting should have been called on the play.
I think that was an understatement.
Yeah. So, again, Evan, now we've got the fact that technology is there. The technology, we can see it. When you look at
there's a Jumbotron at Notre Dame now.
That's right.
I mean,
it's everywhere. I mean, if we can see it, if the NFL has the ability to go back and either suspend a player, levy fines, why can't college football go back and say, this is a clear case of targeting? So even though you weren't flagged on the play, this is not pass interference or an offsides call. This is a clear cut. It's a safety issue, which is the reason the targeting play is in there. Why can't they go back now and say, okay, you should have been called. You're going to sit out the next half of football in the
Sean,
next
you're
game.
Asking a lot of the NCAA here.
I know, right?
I don't know if that's if they're capable of that. I don't get it. I mean, it was clear cut. You know, if you're there on the field, it was evident. If you're watching the game at home and you see the multiple replays, it's evident. You have an official, because when the whole rule started, it was, and it's always been about player safety, is
supposed to be.
But I feel like over the years, it's gotten murkier and murkier. Each week, you see teams lose players that shouldn't, and you see missed calls. I feel like I could have that job, and each time that there is a potential targeting call, I could flip a coin. Heads, it's targeting. Tails, it's not.
Right.
And that's really, when I'm watching college football games, that's how I feel. That is, it's a judgment call on the field, and there's really no consistency on what the rule is. And Brian Kelly mentioned it Tuesday that there are certain cases where a targeting is called for much less than what was missed in this Michigan State game with Wimbush and Frey. You have, at times, a running back, maybe he starts to lower his shoulder, so you have a defender who's coming in thinking there's a different pad level, and then helmets collide. Yes, it was helmet to helmet, but was their intent to do damage to somebody else's head? If you look at and watch this replay, you have someone trying to impale using their head straight down into another person's head.
It doesn't get much more clear cut than the Michigan than Chris Fry.
If you open up the book and maybe there's, you know, now it's a digital book now, right? You open up the digital book and there's a video replay of here is what targeting looks like. The play was dead, and you have somebody going after someone else's head.
He goes up in the air and with his helmet tries to come down
on
top of a player.
And to your point, yes, I mean, if you get it wrong and you admit you get it wrong, what happens then? Nothing happens.
Right.
You just say sorry?
Even if they're going to go back and say, okay, now you've been warned, but the next, there has to be some kind of ramification.
Especially, too, if it's going to stop, if you aren't punished for it and it's been admitted that it's wrong, I mean, you can do it again.
Yeah.
If your chance is 50-50, you might take those odds.
And odds are a guy is going to go out and do it again. If he's going to try to tackle like that, odds are it's going to happen again. It's not going to be deterred if they don't do anything about it.
Right. And, I mean, when you're looking at the pro game, obviously you can't find a college player,
right?
Unless they're getting paid.
It's another path we can go down.
you can't find them. You know, what you're doing is you're taking away playing time, which that is your payment, really. I mean, is your time
motivation
on the field. That's your time on the field. So if you're setting up stipulations on, you know, if this is your second offense, third offense, I mean, if you're a repeat offender, right, you should be punished as a repeat offender. I don't know, you know, when it was initially started, you know, in year two, I think it was, or year three of it, they reviewed the rule, they talked with coaching staffs, they brought in a replay official. If you have a replay official that's designated just to that, you would think that you would get it right more times than not, and I just don't feel like that's the case.
And that's one thing. So now, we kind of talked about this earlier on Sports Beat. Do you separate the duties of the replay official so that he's not looking at your everyday run-of-the-mill type play, so that on every play he can focus on, is there a case of targeting out there that I can be looking at?
I mean, if the goal is player safety, that's a route you could discuss.
You're also looking at extra expense because now you have to pay somebody for every game to do that.
Right.
Which to me makes it seem like it would be easier if teams, conferences, whoever it happens to be, can submit a concrete case of video like we have in this case, because we all saw it on TV, and like you said, they probably all saw it on the Jumbotron as well. If you can go back and submit it after the fact and say, look, here it is, it would seem, if cost effectiveness is part of the deal as well, it would seem more cost effective just to do that and say, okay, now you're suspended for
just
the next half.
Pay me $10 a game, you know?
That's right.
Buy me some food or something.
You're doing everything else, Evan. You might as well be doing replay
too. There we go.
But there's no reason they shouldn't be able to, but like you said, we're probably asking way too much of the NCAA or the conferences or whatever it happens to be.
I mean, I'm sure, yeah, money's going to play into it. Do we want to have someone else that's going to take care of it?
But you brought up a good point before we went on the air, too, that not just should you be able to suspend someone retroactively for this, but you should be also be able to submit and say,
right,
okay, this was not as severe as you said it was during the game, and you should be able to lessen, like,
That's the other side of it is if you get suspended, and especially if it's a marquee matchup or player or team, and they're suspended then for the next week for a quarter or a half, I mean that's that could be a hard hurdle to overcome.
Yeah.
Based on a missed call, and what you're going to go back and say, sorry, we got this wrong, but you're still suspended. Again, consistency or
and
lack thereof.
And that's the biggest problem that I've had with targeting throughout this whole thing, is there has not been consistency. Because again, I mean, you can go down the list, and it starts with the hit on Torrey Hunter in the Texas game last year.
You know when you see it.
Yeah.
You know it.
There were at least two hits on DeShone Kizer in the Virginia Tech game where a guy goes up at his helmet and it wasn't called. And it's right there. There's no consistency at all, and that's the biggest problem. All right.
I agree.
John and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. We're never going to solve it here, but somebody has to decide that it's something that needs to be solved. And I think, and to the NFL's credit, they actually added the video aspect this year where they could go back and look at the video and say, okay, not only does a 15-yard penalty need to be called on this play, but you can also be ejected, which they didn't do last night, which they probably should have. But at the same time, they did add it. They thought that they were doing something, and they really didn't do their job in that case either, it didn't seem like.
No.
So, in any case, more news came out of Brian Kelly's post-practice press conference last night. Kevin Stefferson.
He's back.
Yes. We talked a little bit about him last week, and Brian Kelly said, oh, he's been practicing now. And so this is the second week that he's been practicing. And so Kelly was asked about Kevin Stefferson, and Here were his comments about the possibility of Kevin Stepherson, who hasn't played since last year, returning to play.
He'll be limited in action. You know, he's doing a better job. You know, his cumulative work is such that, you know, he just doesn't have the volume. But he's been doing a much better job in terms of the day-to-day attention to detail and, you know, just his focus. The traits that I had been talking about with him, he's better, but don't expect him to be, you know, playing a high-volume game.
Don't expect him to be playing a high-volume game, but do you take that as we're going to see Kevin Stepherson tomorrow?
I would think so, at least in a limited role.
Yeah.
And especially if the Notre Dame offense plays as I expect them to. You know, he could be in the game maybe third or fourth quarter. I don't know. It's an interesting situation. I mean, you go from, as a freshman, playing and being a highly productive receiver, which, you know, can beg some questions of, did something happen in the offseason, to sitting out four games. He's playing now in the fifth, or at least we assume he's going to be playing in the fifth. I mean, he's a guy that I think would change the dynamic long term of this offense. But also too, I mean, if there's other guys playing in front of him, do you just not play him the rest of the season? I mean, I don't know if that's a conversation or topic that you have. I mean, I think that most Irish fans would want to see him on the field. I'm sure Brandon Winbush would want to see him on the field too. I mean, you have a proven vertical threat where you haven't really had that this year yet. I think it would change reads. I think it would affect safety play for opposing teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his practice reps have gone up over the past couple of weeks. I don't know. It's a little bit of, you know, of a head scratcher of what, you know, what really did occur, I guess.
Right.
So, I think that you will. I just don't know what it will look like. You know, I think the interesting aspect for me is, once he starts to play, if he starts to perform, is his rep count going to increase even more? You know, what does it look like by year end when Notre Dame is playing Stanford? Is he a major piece of this offense?
Well, I think there's no question that we saw this, the Georgia game. We've seen it in a lot of different, even the Boston College game when Notre Dame scored a ton of points, they still didn't have that vertical guy.
Speed kills.
Yeah, that's exactly. there's a reason you recruit speed. He definitely has a different skill set. And here's what Brian Kelly has to say about that skill set that Kevin Stepherson possesses.
He's got, you know, great explosion, you know, takeoff. You know, he can run by, you know, anybody that we play against. So, you know, elite speed. He's got to work on his concentration skills and his focus. You know, he'll drop a ball here or there just because he's not locked in the way we need him to be. But I'm proud of the progress that he's made, and this has been a long haul for him. This is since January. He's had to do a lot to get himself here, you know. So off the field, you know, he's made significant progress. And then, you know, he's got to work his way up the depth chart too, you know, and we're not going to accelerate that. He's going to have to earn that, and that's going to take time too.
There's no question. His 18 and a half yards per catch last year led the team. His 25 receptions, 462 yards, were both third. His five touchdowns were second only to the nine that EQ St. Brown had. So he's a very good receiver. Whether or not we've heard that, whether or not it's just traits and all that kind of stuff.
You would think that would have earned him a starting role right there.
Yeah,
because there was nobody else on the team that had done that.
No, exactly.
Even the transfers that came in. You know, they're coming in a new environment. And then you have, you know, Miles Boykin, you have Chase Claypool. Chris Fink and CJ Sanders would be really the only two that had experience in the offense that had some production. But you're talking about a guy that's, I mean, it's almost 20 yards a touch. I would like to throw to that.
Yeah, that's right. Let's say he earns his way back on then, and whether he gets five snaps or eight or whatever tomorrow, and then going forward, he earns his way back on. That's going to change the dynamic of what we've seen, and we've seen the addition of Chase Claypool. He has produced more last week than he did in his first time out there, but this is going to change that whole thing. Would you just... Is it as simple as moving Claypool inside, or all of a sudden are Stepherson and Claypool competing for that outside spot?
Well, if you want to keep a guy like Chase Claypool on the field, you're going to think about switching. And I still like, and we've talked about this, I think every week, is moving St. Brown around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of catches in the slot over the last couple of weeks that I thought was a great move to really free him up. Because what's happening with a lot of teams is not that they're double covering him, but of course the safety is going to be a little more wary of a guy like him than a few receivers that haven't put up as big of numbers. So if you have a safety rolled over the top as a quarterback, your read then, you might be completely off that read from the snap or pre-snap, your pre-snap read or your pre-snap look. You might not even look that way. You're going to be on to number two and number three if it's a progression read or a coverage read very quickly. When you can move a guy around like that, and then if you bring Stepherson into the equation too, I mean, you have two or three guys with position versatility where you can say, all right, well, let's now, instead of having a guy like EQ to the field, let's put Stepherson a la Fuller over the course of the last couple of years with a vertical presence. He can run the safety off, and now you have a one-on-one matchup on either on the backside or in the slot with a guy like Claypool or St. Brown. So, I mean, we can talk about it as much as we want, but that speed element is, it's a game changer for an offense.
Exactly.
I mean, it opens up so much. It opens up the run game too. I mean, you can't have a safety that's going to be as hard of a run fill guy if you know your edge player at a receiver can run by your cornerback if he's either playing in man coverage or a soft zone.
And I know it's frustrating for fans, and fans have been complaining, why isn't Stepherson on the field? Everyone wants to see your best players out on the field. But sometimes players do things that behind the scenes that keep themselves off the field. And a head coach doesn't have to stand up there at the microphone and rattle off
it's his program. It's his prerogative. I'm sure that it was taken, whatever happened, it was taken care of behind closed doors. You know, what we've heard since January, and that kind of seems to be the end point of whatever the previous mentality was, and then the start of whatever this cultural change has been, where you're talking about the traits that are necessary to play on the field. Now, you would think that the physical traits would be a large portion of that too, but you know, you want to balance the work in the classroom, any off-field issues that may have occurred. And I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic of you know, why maybe more wasn't made of it. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, I guess, the elephant in the room almost of what exactly did happen, and it being dealt with. You know, magically 5 games into the season now. You know, you sit out the first 4, and now you're playing. So I'm not the coach, right? I'm not running the program, so you know those answers aren't going to come through me. And you know, in my time playing, you know, we had things that we dealt with internally too. And I think, you know, it was difficult as a player, especially if things were happening within your position group. You know, we had an off season issue with a quarterback, and it was, well, we had a couple actually, and you know, leading up to the 2007 season, which obviously, you know, that's not a great season to bring back up, but you know, it felt very much like last year, mm-hmm. where there were some off field issues very close to the start of the season. Not that we lacked leadership from a lot of the upperclassmen, but there were some guys in some key situations, some key positions that were thrust into leadership roles that I don't think were necessarily ready for that. And made some poor decisions off the field that kind of set the tone for what our season was like. And that had to change. And, you know, you're seeing that kind of evolution, I think, of the program this year of we're going to set the bar in a number of areas, just not what your performance is on the field. But certainly to your point, yeah, you want to have your best players on the field, but if they're not living up to a certain standard, at least from what the coaching staff is setting, they're not going to see the field. You could be in the doghouse if you're the best player on the team. That could happen.
And I think to your point about the leadership, when you look at last year, there are definitely some parallels there because there were some questions. Who are the real leaders? Mm-hmm. Are the leaders doing their part? Whereas on this team, you can see really strong leadership.
There's multiple levels too of leadership. Yeah. I don't think it's just coming from the guys that are on the field, which is usually where it is. I think that there's some, you know, I think there's, they've done a really nice job of building leadership, not only from the top, but even saying, all right, we're going to build some leadership from freshmen and onwards up there to build some stability within the program.
It is 12:24. Let's take a timeout. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the defense. And speaking of leadership, some comments from Drew Tranquil about the defense and kind of the mentality the defense has, what they've taken from that loss to Georgia and how they've kind of worked off that. Going forward, we'll hear from him. We'll also hear Evan's Chalk Talk. We've got all that and more still to come on Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. Game day tomorrow. Full day of Notre Dame football. Game day begins tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock with Jack Swarbrick Show here on WSBT. Brian Kelly Show at noon, followed by Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl at 1 o'clock. Do you know who your guests are going to be?
Yeah, Tim's actually out of town. So it's going to be myself and Tom Loy, who works with me at 24/7 Sports.
Okay.
So Tom and I will talk a little recruiting, talk about the team, obviously. And then we're going to have the president of Miami of Ohio, both of them, and this is continuing to honor Coach Parsegian as well, because there's some ties there to Miami of Ohio. And both were very involved with the Neiman Pick Foundation. And so is the president. And then we're also going to have Coach Parsegian's daughter, Cindy. She'll be on the show as well. And then John Dampier and Frank Pomerico, both from the 1972 and 73 team, will be on the show.
All right. Excellent. That is at 1 o'clock tomorrow from Ivy Court Inn and Suites, right next to campus. Then at 2 o'clock, it's Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and me at... the pregame show, the official pregame show, starts at 6 o'clock. Kickoff is at 5 o'clock. When that's over, Notre Dame football postgame show, Darren Pritchett hosts along with Reggie Brooks. I'll have player interviews as well from down on the field after the game. So a full day of football begins tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock right here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. With former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers with the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. Coming up on 12:30 on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. This is kind of that time of year where things really get busy on campus. We've got the first hockey exhibition game coming up Sunday at 7 o'clock over at Compton Family
Arts. You're going to be on the air.
That's right. Second period's all mine, baby. You're coming over to do color, right?
I would love to. I'll throw
you're
in some great.
Welcome.
Yeah. The ice is cold.
That's right. The ice is cold. The puck is hot.
That's perfect. Use those over and over right
That's
there.
That's right. How many times can you work that in? Darren Pritchett will have the first and third periods. I've got the middle period.
I'm pretty good at NHL on video games, though.
Are you?
Yeah, maybe I should just, I'll just turn the volume up a little louder and listen to what the commentators are saying.
There you go. I used to be really good at, I think it was Nintendo Olympic hockey or something like that. Yeah. it's been a while, though. All right. Well, as I said, we haven't talked about the defense a whole lot this year, Evan, because we've spent so much time breaking down Brandon Wimbush, which we're going to do in your Chalk Talk here in a little bit as well, which I'm really interested to hear. But I talked to Jude Tranquil after the Georgia game and asked him what the team would take from that game going forward after that tough loss, and here's what he told me about that.
And I think if we learn one thing from tonight, it's a test of our grit and our do we really trust this process, because we know the work we've put in, and that will come to fruition if we continue to trust it. So I see a group of guys in the locker room after the game that are ready to come out and punish BC and our future opponents. And so that's what I'm taking away is a group of guys that truly does trust the process and wants to move forward.
Sean, well done. We got another grit.
That's right. No grit.
Weekly grit comment. Have you picked that book up yet?
I haven't, but I actually Googled it the other day. I was something else. I think it showed up like in my Facebook feed or something. Maybe it was because I Googled it.
Dreaming about it.
You know how that stuff and the algorithms were. Yeah, that's what it is. Just dreaming about the whole thing. But, I mean, when you look at especially the way, I wouldn't even say just the defense, but the whole team, and when Drew Tranquil talked about punishing opponents, I think we've seen some of that the last couple of weeks against BC and Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a team, and I said this before the season started, is they needed to be opportunistic. I don't know if they're dominating or punishing teams, but they're doing a great job. I mean, it's you know, there's confidence. You're seeing them play fast. You got rid of the read and react. You're seeing them try to create a new line of scrimmage. You have linebackers that are playing fast flow. A secondary group that, I mean, who would have picked Nick Coleman to have the type of season he's having so far? Nick Watkins is having a pretty good year. Obviously, Sean Crawford is always around the football. Julian Love with a pick six last week. They're doing a great job on third down. They're timely with their pressures. And, you know, they're creating turnovers. So I mean, it's right now, I think the turnaround for me, it's surprising.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't have pegged this, you know, four or five games into the season that they're, you know, they're putting up some of the numbers that they are. Some of the players are really almost having renaissances in their career because they're finally playing free and fast in a position. And Tranquil's one of the best examples. You know, the Rover position, I think, fits him very well. He's been doing a great job. The defensive line, Andrew Trombetti has probably played the best of his career so far here early on. This defensive staff has done a nice job. Mike Elko, a lot of credit to him. One of my favorite coaches, too, is Clark Lea, who's the linebacker coach. You know, just watching him through the spring, mm-hmm. He's a master communicator. And that was one thing that Elko brought, too, was, you know, taking some of these complex things. Because the game of football, I mean, it's not a simple game, you know, anymore. It's not line up and hit the guy in front of you. You know, there's a lot to it. It's a chess match from play to play. But communicating some of this higher level knowledge and giving it to the players to be able to then, you know, play at a very fast paced level is what I think had been missing, and tapping into what Notre Dame recruits are smart kids. But if you can still give them something, all right, you're a smart kid, but let's still make it simple for you. All right, you're gonna be able to make decisions much quicker. But also, you know, what you've seen is really, in a very, I guess, broad sense, is there's a philosophy behind what they're trying to accomplish.
Well, and when you talk about keeping things simple, it is, as you said, it's still football. There are some complicated things that go on out there, but I just watch them, and they seem like they're so much more prepared for what they're going to see from the opposing offenses.
First down, they know what they're doing. They have an identity. Second down, they have an identity. They know what they're going to expect. And third down, same thing. You know, it's here are our coverages, here are our base coverages. If they do this, we do this, right? They know going in. And I think that was something that has been missed over the past few years. It was, here's what we're going to do. You know, we're gonna read and react when the ball is snapped versus pre-snap, I already know where I'm going to be. And that's a nice thing to rest your hat on and saying, I've done my film study. Here is what our philosophy is. I just have to go and execute it. Instead of, okay, I'm reading this guy that then reads this guy. You know, if it's a top-down type of read where the safety is then reading the linebacker, uh-huh. Linebacker is reading the, you know, that's you don't want to slow. You don't want to be slow on defense.
No, absolutely. And the more simple things can be, and the less complicated it is, the easier it is for all those guys to play fast. Here's just kind of a quick rundown. They're tied for 29th in scoring.
That's amazing.
It's like really. 71st in total defense, 73rd in rushing defense, 51st in pass efficiency defense, and tied for 13th right now.
That's
in
huge.
Turnovers caused.
Yeah, that's huge.
Massive.
And there was one other I saw, too. They're second in the nation in touchdowns, rushing touchdowns allowed per game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're looking at an indicator of success, if you can stop a team from running the football and really, you know, stopping a team from scoring touchdowns in the red zone via the run, and they've been pretty timely against the pass too, you're going to have pretty good success. And one other thing I'd like to point out too is second half adjustments. I mean, they've been lights out in the second half of most
Absolutely.
Games.
Absolutely.
Even Georgia, you know, they've been great in the second, whatever they're doing. I don't know if they're going in there and they've got a special, you know, drink that they're drinking or what it is. That the strength staff or the trainers are putting together, but Mike Elko is doing a great job with his staff of making sure that they're prepared, of being prepared for the second half. And that's a trait of great coaches, being able to, you know, take what happens in the first half, adjust to it, and then go out and execute in the second half.
In the second half, they're outscoring opponents 72-37.
That's going to win you some ball games right there.
Absolutely, and even the 37, I think a lot of it has come and not necessarily crunch time.
Right.
Like, just look at the last couple of weeks. Points have been
even
scored,
Michigan
but how much
State,
did it matter?
You know, there were some big yardage chunks in mm-hmm. the, you know, late in the third and the fourth quarter when really the game was out of hand. So if you're looking at some of those yardage numbers too, I mean, that was
well,
post.
Yeah. The the drive at the end of the third and the start of the fourth quarter, it was 19 plays,
right?
81 yards, 8.5 minutes. You're up 35-10. You don't care. You're, you're saying,
keep doing that.
Yeah. Grind it out. Keep handing the ball off. We'll take it.
3 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards. All right, great. Absolutely. First down. Try to get 10 more.
Absolutely. Here's a quick comment from Brian Kelly about the Irish defensive line.
I'd give him an A-. You know, and I think the minus is probably lost a little bit of focus here and there at times, but their technique, their ability to use their hands, play with a much better discipline in terms of how they fit in our front seven is probably an A+. And then just, you know, maintaining that intensity, that you know, that endurance, that mental endurance that I talk about, that's the area that they have to continue to grow at. We're getting some pretty good edge pressure from our front four. We're getting batted balls, and you know, we're getting the kind of integrity that front four needs relative to the run fit. So Mike Elson's done a terrific job with that group.
They have. It's just night and day better than what we saw the last few years.
I'm still giving them a B+, though, right now.
Your B+, yeah. Not A-?
No.
Why? But,
I mean, you know, it's the like I said, the pressures have been timely. I think you know, long-term, you'd like to see some of the pass rush numbers go up, but they are doing a nice job of batting some balls down, some quarterback hurries. You know, if you can get to the quarterback and create a sack, you know, that's different than a hurry. Sure, it could change field position a little bit more. But I'm you know, A-, B+. That's
a great grade. What's the difference?
I mean, if we look at our I think our early season rankings of these positions, I don't think you probably would, outside of safety, right, which we had at the bottom. Mm-hmm. I think you would look at either interior or defensive line, kind of middle of the pack. If you're tossing in, you know, the linebacker group and what we thought of the cornerback group, you know, you're kind of middle of the pack. But the way that they're playing right now, they're raising, you know, they're going to raise the play. If you're able to compete at the line of scrimmage with four, you know, a rush of four, then it's going to help your linebackers fit. And that's why Greer Martini and Tavon Coney and Niles Morgan all leading the team in tackles because mm-hmm. of what the defensive line's doing. And then if you can create some pressures, you're going to have a quarterback that's going to throw early. You get a pick six. Now your cornerbacks look good. You know, it just helps so much on the run fit and then also defending the pass if you can do some damage at the point of attack.
But I think after the last couple of years, if you looked at both the safeties and the defensive line, you're saying, okay, they should be better. How much better are they going to be? You're probably hoping that at best you're going to get B- out of both. And the fact that you're talking about even in the B+, A- range, whatever it happens to be, that's
and one
something.
Other thing too, and you have to give credit to the strength and conditioning program is, and you just mentioned what they're doing in the second half. They're wearing teams down. Mm-hmm. You know, they're competing for four quarters, and you know we'll see how long lasting, you know, that is once we get into the second half of the season, and you know they're going back to back weeks of USC, NC State, Wake Forest, Miami, Navy, and then Stanford. That's going to be a big chunk there of can they play four quarters of consistent football. They've been on the field quite a bit too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're third in the nation right now in most plays on the field per game at 85. So again, like when you look at that Michigan State drive, that something like that
it's
factors
a bend
in there.
It's a bend and don't break defense. It is. Don't give up the big play. And if they can get off, I believe Michigan State, they're a little higher on their percentage on third down conversions than the past three games previous to that. Notre Dame had done a really nice job of getting off the field on third down.
But again, when you look at some of those numbers, most of that is still coming in the first half as opposed to the second half.
True, yeah. And I mean, it's a complete shift in mentality and execution of creating those turnovers, which, you know, then your offense, which 21 points off of turnovers. I mean, that's
massive.
That'd be awesome.
And that's, yeah, when you're talking about the 8 of the 9 turnovers have resulted in points.
That's winning football, too.
That's exactly it. That's right.
That's
there.
It.
It's right there. All right, 12:42. We're going to do that Chalk Talk next. And Evan also has something else after the Chalk Talk that I think is pretty interesting.
And if we told you, would you believe it?
If we told you. This sounds like a 30 for 30 in the making right there. What if I told you? But it's going to be it's some interesting stuff. I think you're going to enjoy it. That is coming up next when the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is 12:46 on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Now, I forgot. You just mentioned Ashton Ruskowski.
Yeah.
How do you say his last name?
Ruskowski.
Ruskowski.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's
there's a Z
good.
In there. Sometimes you never know. Yeah, the quarterback tonight for St.
Joe. It just auto-corrects in my phone when I send it, when I start typing it in.
Easier just to say Ashton, right?
Yeah, he's having a pretty good year. I've been working with him since he's been 7th and 8th grade. You know, would love to, if the coaches are listening right now, I'd love to see you guys chuck it around maybe 30 or 40 times tonight with him.
I'm sure.
But should be, you know, it's a kind
Bart
of an interesting.
Curtis doesn't want to see that from Mishawaka.
No, I'm sure not. Yeah, he, you know, he's been throwing the ball well. I think, you know, a lot of things have clicked for him as far as a thrower. But they've been very competitive, played really tough against Concord, who I think is one of the best teams in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Penn last week, you know, you're a kickoff return from Paul Muala away from it being the 23-14 game.
Yep.
So, yeah, St. Joe's been playing well. I know Mishawaka's, they just came off a big win against Elkhart Central, so should be a good one.
Absolutely. At kickoff at 7 o'clock tonight over at St. Joe, 6:45 pregame here on WSBT. All right, let's do a little Chalk Talk.
Let's do it.
Evan, Brandon Wimbush, let's go through. You've worked with him before, as we've talked about, and the quarterback experience that you have. Let's go through a play in the eyes of Brandon Wimbush. Kind of break things down, what's happening when he comes out and he's looking at things, starting with pre-snap.
So how they're signaling plays in right now, there's usually a quarterback on a sideline that's giving some type of signal that'll give formation and play. When I was playing, we had wristbands, so they'd signal in a number to us. So, you know, you would get a play in the huddle. And just a sample play here that I'll give so you know the people can kind of understand what's going through the quarterback's mind is the play that comes in. It's zero out slot, alert FIP, jab 36 sub, Z swing, alert jab 130 cross, X coach check down, double cadence on one. Now, you know, some plays are a little bit shorter. This play right here is actually two plays in one. So if you're going into a game, especially a home game where you can do some check with me's, if noise isn't an issue on the offensive side, you can do like a silent cadence or a double cadence where, you know, you get up to the line of scrimmage, you go through your whatever it is, black 80 said hut, and now you can see if there's any safety rotation. So I'm going to back up real quick. The play that I gave, zero out slot.
Because you went through that
right, pretty
quick.
zero out slot. And honestly, like I said, you know, we talked about Brandon Wimbush, maybe why the reads were late. This is something that it's just becomes almost second nature. It's like learning a new language. And there was just one day for me that it kind of clicked. I was saying it the right way. It was flowing off my tongue the right way. But I was also understanding what I was doing. You know, the physical side, you work on that so much. But if you're thinking, it's hard for the physical side to be successful because now there were times I'd get in the huddle and I couldn't even say the play. So once you have an understanding of the playbook and what's going on, it makes the physical side much, much easier.
Well, and I think, like, when you say that, when you're thinking, it slows you down. I mean, it is like that in any sport and really anything that you do. The more that you have to sit there and think about, okay, this is what I have to do, this is what I have to say, whatever it happens to be, that's going to slow you down.
Yeah. And so to take it back, zero out slot, I'll say the play over again. Slow. Zero out slot, alert FIP, jab 36 sub, Z swing, alert jab 130 cross, X go check down, double cadence on one. So the first part of that, the zero out slot, that's the formation. So that's telling the receivers where to line up. As a quarterback, obviously, you need to know where everyone is. You have the alert FIP, which is going to be an alert motion in based on any type of safety rotation in the box if you need an extra blocker. The jab 36 sub is a run where we're going to actually do a jab fake. So I'd open up to the left, and then I'd hand off to the running back who's going to run to the right. That jab 36 sub is going to tell the line how to block. Based on where I ID the Mike linebacker, they're going to then block up to the second level. Now, the Mike linebacker is not necessarily just the Mike linebacker. The Mike linebacker could be what you would say the Sam linebacker is. How I identify the linebacking unit is how the offensive line then blocks the front four. those down linemen, and then the linebackers.
So when you say, like, 54 is the mic.
Correct.
That is what you identify, what exactly. You want the blocker to go to. Not necessarily that's definitely the
based
mic.
Based on who I identify, they will block it.
Okay.
Based on that. It's not always the guy who is the middle linebacker. Okay.
Gotcha.
It could change from play to play, and usually where it changes is from run to pass. So let's say that look right there that I just said, we have the run call on. They rotate a safety down into the box. I don't want to run into a box that has too many players in it. So what I would do is after I go through my double cadence, I see that safety rotate down, I would point to my helmet and I would say alert. So I'm saying alert to the line so they can hear that the play is now changing, and I'm pointing to my helmet so that the running back and then obviously the wide receivers can see what I'm saying. The second half of the play that I mentioned is a completely different play. Now we have jab 130 cross X go check down. So now we've changed the run play to a pass play. The jab 130 is now a pass protection, which tells the line that they are pass blocking, which now tells the running back he's not getting the ball, he's picking up some type of pressure, and then it's telling the receivers what route they're running. So within one play, I have two reads based on what the safeties may be doing. Now, you're going to get some good teams that they're going to hide that rotation. So then it gets into how well did you study film? Are you seeing that rotation pre-snap? Is it happening at the snap? Your preparation then in practice and then your film study is going to come into play. And if you aren't super experienced and you haven't done it a lot on the field, you could easily miss what would be, I guess, from, you know, a bird's eye view of sitting in the press box of that's obvious rotation. You should be alerting this to a pass and taking a shot downfield. So on a play, and mind you, you have to, number one, signal this play in, say this play, get to the line of scrimmage, go through your double cadence, then decide if there's rotation or not, re-identify the mic if you have to, all within the play clock.
Right.
And then you get done. Okay, well, let's say now you get to the snap and you're it's
and
a
then
throw.
We all get to sit back and in real time, pick him apart and
hey, well, how did you miss that guy that was wide open right there, right? Yeah, and that's the thing is that's one play. You get done with that. Let's say you complete it. Great job. Pat yourself on the back. Go do it again. Or you mess up. Okay, well, what did I learn? Well, I only have 30 seconds. Give me the next play, all right? And it's over and over and over again. Each play, each drive, and not every play is that long. You know, we had some plays that were like, you know, zero flood, FAP, sprint 38, okay? Much shorter. You know, there always were reads, though, or audibles built into, and perhaps probably best known over the last probably 8 years or so was Tommy Rees, who would, you know, he didn't want to get into a bad play. Mm-hmm. And when you have a grasp of the offense, you're able to do that. You know, Peyton Manning's another guy. You know, Tom Brady's another guy that, you know, you have a called play, but you really have, if you have a knowledge of the playbook, and Brandon Winbush might not be there yet. If you have a knowledge of the playbook, you can change plays at the line of scrimmage based on what you're seeing, what you've seen in your film study, to then dictate the tempo towards the defense.
Well, and everyone's talking about Tony Romo and how great he is right now as a color analyst. Well, part of that, if you watched him week in and week out, is the last few years when he was healthy, I mean, the play clock was winding down, and he was standing there making all those calls and moving those guys around on every play.
You got to be even keeled in that situation, too.
That's right.
You can't panic when you're seeing that play clock at 10, 9, 8. You know, you still have to stick with, I got to get my guys lined up. I got to get into the right play.
Well, and that's, it's one thing to call the play and go through all that, but that changing of protections, how difficult is that piece for a young quarterback
it's difficult early. And like I said, it was one of those, you know, it was almost like you show up to practice one day and it clicks and you're like, oh, this is how our protection works. So I'll give an example. In the offense we ran here at Notre Dame, we ran a lot of our protections were a slide to the weak side. So if I knew that weak side linebacker wasn't coming, I would identify the mic one player over. So I knew that the six guys that were in our box there, our pass blocking mm-hmm. box, were all going to be picked up. So I could change that. Once I had a good idea of how each protection worked, I could kind of manage what our offensive line and even then our running backs were doing to make sure that I was protected.
It is coming up on 12:56. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. Game prediction, and at least one What Have I Told You before we wind down this episode of Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. just about 12:58. Got a little bit more than 2 minutes left. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch. We'll do our prediction here in a minute. What if I told you? You've got some good stuff. Throw it
out. Yeah, if we told you before the season, would you believe it here? Dexter Williams would have more touchdowns than Josh Adams at this point.
No way.
No chance. And Williams right now only 20 carries, Adams 65, but Brandon Winbush has been scoring quite a few touchdowns in the red zone.
Yep.
Second one, Notre Dame would be fourth in the nation in red zone touchdown percentage. Would anybody have picked it? 89.5% right now, touchdown rate.
That's
unbelievable.
Amazing.
All right, Mike Elko's defense would be ranked second in the nation in number of rushing touchdowns allowed per game.
No way.
No chance, right? Okay,
no,
how about no this one right here? The Irish offense would rank top 10 in yards per rush, rush yards per game, and rushing touchdowns per game. I would think about a yes on that, though.
Yeah,
the expectations were high.
Maybe.
I don't know about top 10, but I would think that based on who they had.
After watching them run the ball last year, 2 years ago, you'd say that's what you would have expected last year, probably.
And then lastly on this this Irish defense, Tavon Coney would be leading the Irish in tackles. Three linebackers to lead the team, though, right now.
Yep, three linebackers in the Rover right after that.
Which
is kind of a linebacker, too.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Good stuff.
A lot, yeah. I don't think I would have believed any of those.
I don't either. Maybe Dexter Williams, but that would have been the only one even close, I think. All right, we've got a minute left. Prediction for tomorrow, Evan.
Prediction for I don't think it has to be close, but it's going to be, does Notre Dame come out and set the tone early? You've got a team that's going to come in, I think that's going to come in excited, you know, looking. I mean, they don't have anything to lose. Notre Dame's got to really smash them in the mouth to start the game, set the tone early, pressure Gus Raglan, who's the Miami quarterback, and then offensively continue with a balanced attack, you know, mix the run and the pass. I think they're going to be able to control the line of scrimmage. I'm looking for a big win. I think it's going to be 42-17 Notre Dame.
42-17. So that is 59 points. The over-under is 53.5. You're over on the
over. I'm going over. And I think I'm also, it's 21.5. So I'm going over that too.
Yep. All right. I've got Notre Dame winning as well. I will give my score prediction with Eric and Darren tomorrow.
Make sure you listen tomorrow.
Sports Beat. That's right. Just be listening. Great stuff today, Evan. With Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM.